I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From a fat and unhealthy kid to a giant who supports thousands of children across the nation leading a healthy life, Priya Prakash is leading the wave of positive change through healthcare, fitness awareness, and her empathic words. She has shaken the formal approach of parenting and childcare in our country and abroad. From TED Talk to World Economic Forum, she has just one agenda: make a better world for next generations. Let's health set go in our next episode with Priya Prakash.
Welcome to Road to Revamp, Priya.
Thank you.
So it was so hard to catch you,
Please.
But there is a reason, because you're trying to, you know, you're so committed towards the health and sanitation for this country and the future generation especially. But so we are here now, and I really want to know, and my listeners want to know, who really is Priya Prakash, though we know you.
Okay.
But still, like, how you formed into someone who you are right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I have really changed over the course of my life. And now, the way I look at it, I am just a work in progress. You know, it is, and that kind of mentality of being a work in progress is also a mentality that I've developed very recently. I think growing up, I was a very different person with a different set of values. Mm-hmm. So I feel like all of us, you know, lead our life on the basis of certain core values that we have. Values of, you know, the way we talk to other people, the values of how we treat ourselves, the values of, you know, what we feel is right and wrong. So as I was growing up, those values are very different. And I think they were shaped by my family. They were shaped by my friends, my environment. As a child, those are the only exposures you have. They're also shaped by television and things like that. So if I just have to talk, because this is a health kind of podcast, so yes. I want to talk in terms of that. As a child, my family's version of health was, you know, as I've mentioned in other places before, it was that, you know, in India, a healthy child is someone who is healthy. I mean, you know, you should look like you're from a well-fed family.
Yes.
So that's what my family believed in also.
A little fat.
Fat or overweight or whatever is the technically correct term for that. So that was me. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I was a little fat. Mm-hmm. I mean, my body had a tendency to store body fat from when I was a little child. Mm-hmm. And what people don't understand today is that, you know, the kind of body that you get accustomed to as a kid, it's very hard to change that kind of body fibers as you grow older.
Right.
But my parents obviously didn't know that. So we used to, I still remember waking up and my grandmother was in the house, always lived with us, still lives with us. Mm-hmm. So we used to get 6 aloo parathas in the morning, proper thick with, you know, aloo and all the pickle and all of that stuff. We used to have that in our breakfast. Then in my tiffin again, it used to be some kind of a paratha with something else. And every time we used to come back home, every day almost, I got an ice cream. Wow. Because right below my bus stand, I mean, there used to be an ice cream guy, and there was no issue in doing all those things, you know. It wasn't a bad thing to do, like kids having ice cream, what's so bad in that? In fact, it's normal.
Yes.
You know, you come back home after a hot day, you have that. We used to go home, have a mango shake, have some chips or whatever. And when I started growing up, we got an allowance, you know, 10 rupees, 20 rupees. We used to go out, and what we did with that money was buy a packet of chips. I mean, obviously, it's what we wanted to do. I bought a Kit Kat, chips, chocolate, and of course, when my parents used to go abroad somewhere, they used to come back home with chocolates. So food, in fact, is such an important part of our culture. It's an important part of the family culture, of celebrations. All birthday parties are full of food. Anytime you meet someone, it's over food. So it's just an integral part. But because of that, you know, I piled on a lot of weight at a young age. Now, for a young child to store body fat, that means something would have seriously gone wrong with your body at that age. Because a human body actually recovers very fast. Even a child's body metabolizes things very fast compared to an adult's body. I mean, our metabolism is just dropping every year as we grow older. But at a young age, now that I think back to it, I'm pretty shocked to think that, I mean, there was so much blood sugar levels, you know, floating around in my body that my body started storing that, and in a very horrible fashion. So imagine if you're overweight or obese at the age of 4 and now you're 14, you've already spent a decade being overweight.
Right.
That's 10 years of body fat. I mean, to reverse that is, I mean, it will take a lot of hard work to break that. And it's not only the physical connections, it is also the neurological connections that are forming in our mind. When you talk about habits that are being developed, when you talk about the food palate in my tongue that's being developed, to break all that, to break such a cemented structure, takes a lot of time. Anyway, it's not like I spent a decade in that. I think I spent almost 2 decades being that way. I mean, maybe a little lesser. You could say more than 15 years of being in that state. Now, as a kid, it's okay. But as you start growing up in school, you know, the way people are so mean these days, they make a lot of fun of you. You know, I used to always be that fat kid who nobody looked at. I mean, it's one of those things where the boys, obviously, as you grow older, you know, you want boys to like you, and they only like those thin, tall, pretty girls. And I was very far from the definition of that. So when your self-esteem starts getting affected by things like this, you know, girls in that sense, of course, were not mean to me, because I feel like girls felt more confident being around me, because they said, "Acha, you know, if I stand next to Priya, at least I look better than her." Literally, you know.
Relativity.
Yeah, it's a theory of relativity. So they, in fact, felt better. So I used to be everybody's friend, and girls and boys were like, all obviously, they used to call me all kinds of names. Like there were these two boys who used to put dead rats into my desk, and they used to make these cartoons of me called The Thing. So if you guys are listening ever, you know who you are. So they used to make cartoons of me on the board. They never used to title it my name, but every time I had to come back from lunch, and everybody would be standing around the board and laughing, like The Thing marries the mountain, or The Thing goes swimming, and then it would be like all the water came out of the pool, and because I jumped into it. And it was so humiliating for me, because, you know, when you go back home, you look in the mirror, it's a very helpless feeling.
Right.
Like, you don't know what to do. And if, I mean, I used to watch all these weight loss kind of, you know, read all these weight loss kind of things, and they used to say, do this, do that. It's just too confusing for a child. You know, as a child, when you're 14, 15 years old.
As a child, you're looking for fat loss.
You're looking for you're just looking to be thin.
Yeah.
That's all you want.
How ridiculous. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Should think about a lot of other things, like what he'll become in future, what she'll do as a businesswoman or as a doctor, and there you were thinking about how to look thin.
Yes, and
yeah.
I mean, I need to say, it's not only me, I'll be coming to that, but that's all was the focus of my life. I mean, I just wanted to be thin somehow, and it just wasn't happening, because now, as I know, fat loss, weight loss is such a scientific thing. Yes. And to break the history of obesity in your body is like a big task. So that time I didn't know. And the only people to help me out were my school friends. Mm-hmm. Also my 14, 15 year old, very knowledgeable school friends. Yeah. Like, you know, Priya, you know, maybe you should like stop eating, or maybe you should, you know, these kinds of theories are prevalent today. I see many girls who don't eat anything. And two, and this is not an over-exaggeration. Mm-hmm. I went from a school to Lady Sriram College, which is a girls' college. And girls, again, all girls, you can see how people are looking at food as a concept in general. They would eat like just maybe buy a packet of chips or nachos in the morning, just eat that and that's it. They would not eat. They would rather be like, you know what, we'll go smoke a cigarette or we'll mm-hmm. drink some coffee. And you know, and yes, a lot of them were very thin and skinny.
Again, suppress the hunger.
Suppress the hunger. I think it's all about suppressing the hunger. That's actually how I looked at it. I was thinking that how can I stop being hungry? And these are some of the things that take you into the completely wrong direction.
Right.
And there are enough people who are out there supporting this. You would not believe the amount of girls who eat food and who throw it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of people. Again, there is a support group for that also. People are okay with doing that. Why? Because they are just insecure about themselves. It all stems...
At the same time, I don't think people know how to actually go about it. Like you were saying, there is no scientific knowledge behind their experiments. And there is nobody in the family or in the schools or in the colleges who can actually direct them into the right direction.
Yes. So, see, for me, because this whole journey started, I started eating very less, and I lost weight. Right. No miracle there. You do lose weight, right? If you eat much lesser, you end up losing weight. And I did lose weight, and I thought, let me join a gym. So I went and I used to, you know, walk on the treadmill, and I thought I'm doing something. But at the end of the day, every morsel of food I ate, I was just scared to eat. What if I go back to who I was? You know, because once you lose weight in a horrible way, you are just scared of food. You know, you can't approach it in the same way. You feel like if you do this, what if you go back to what you used to be? And I used to try to go to the gym. I used to be tired all the time. I think mentally exhausted, not able to focus on anything worthwhile. Like you said, I should have been focusing on my future, on other things. And this was just the center point of my life. And one day, again from the journey of, from the thought of weight loss, I ended up walking into a CrossFit facility because I thought I was going to learn kickboxing. Oh. And I'd heard all these models, you know, they only do kickboxing and, you know, they lose weight or whatever. So I thought CrossFit was some kind of a kickboxing place.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into it and I realized, oh my God, this, what a weird gym. There are no machines here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like just people doing random things, like, you know, lifting some bar and doing push-ups or whatever. And there I saw, of course, today, the person who's my coach, Rajiv sir. So he was there. And, you know, he was just saying, okay, you want to come and work out? I said, what is the workout? He said, it's written on the board. I said, what? Which gym? Why is there a workout written on a blackboard? It's so weird. But the moment I started doing that, so I'd come for an evening class, I remember. And I was really exhausted. I didn't even do what was on the board. I did something totally different because I was a beginner. It was my first class. And I just was on the floor, not able to understand why I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going on with my body. And I remember I joined with one person who used to smoke every time he walked out of the gym. And, you know, he's like, we're walking out of the gym and he's doing this. I said, my God, that workout was so tough. He's like, yeah, it's okay. And, you know, he lights up this cigarette and I'm like, yeah, what? So, fine. I mean, I was in this whole zone. Either way, we decided to continue with this place. It wasn't kickboxing, but I thought, okay, maybe I'll have some weight loss going on. So I went there again and again and again. And, you know, you start to realize, you start to reflect, why is it that I'm not able to do it? But there are other people in the gym, in the box, who are able to do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw some really old people, 35, 40 years old women, like lifting more than 100 pounds. I mean, now for me, that's not that much. But that time I was like, how is it possible? She has 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing all this. And I'm a young girl and I can't do it. Then I started reflecting more on the rest of my life, I said, what do I have to do to be strong at the gym? Because I wanted to learn all this. Like, I wanted to do a push-up. I wanted to do a pull-up. I wanted to lift heavy. And I told that friend of mine, first of all, that friend of mine who joined with me left after a few months. He said, I can't do all this. I said, I want to do it. And I became more motivated. I said, I started doing research. I started reading about how you become strong, because the effect was not on staying in that skinny state. I started thinking about, wait, maybe I want to, you know, lift 100 pounds. That's my new goal. My goal initially was, how can I be really, really skinny? So I remember I used to be 66 kgs or like 67 kgs at a height of like 5'1". I'm quite short in that sense. And I came down to 49 when I stopped eating things. I mean, it was a very sickly state, to be very honest.
But you lost 17 kgs.
Yeah, I lost a lot of weight. Okay, I came down to that. Now when I joined CrossFit, I just wanted to maintain that. Like, I wanted to maintain that thing.
49 kgs.
So I used to be eating a lot lesser. And I used to go there, I used to feel weak. I couldn't do anything. I said, wait, I need to figure out what to eat. And nobody around me had any of these answers, like what to eat, when to, you know, how much to sleep, what to do. The more I read about it, the more the world of not thinness, but of health opened up to me. Like, if you're healthy, then you can do anything. And I started thinking about, wow, like, what is health really all about? Is it about food? Is it about the gym? Is it about... And then I realized it's not about food or the gym. It's about so many other things.
Yes.
It's about sleeping. It's about being in tune with your mind. I mean, this whole mind, body, soul, entire concept starts coming out to you. And you realize to be healthy is not just a diet. It's not just an exercise. It's just a way of life, how you have to start leading your life. I used to sleep at 2 a.m., I remember, and wake up at 8. Like, I was that kind of a person. I started sleeping at 10:30. My parents thought something is wrong with me, because years I had been like this. I told them I need to throw out all these things from our kitchen. Food will not be made this way. And nobody in my family, they were shocked, because they don't live like this.
Yes.
Everybody in my family sleeps at 1:32, and, you know, they're just like watching TV the whole time and sitting there and eating unhealthy food. I said, no. I am putting so much hard work at the gym. My goal is that I want to lift this weight and I want to do this pull-up. And if I need to do that, I need to work backwards.
Yes.
So I started really reading up on nutrition. I knew I had to get at least 7 hours of sleep a day. All this 4 or 5 hours thing is not going to work. I mean, a lot of things I just started eliminating. And that also required for me to eliminate... And this is a point that I don't know if people talk about, but it required me to eliminate a lot of my friends.
Exactly. You have to change your circle.
You have to change your circle. The more I became a much healthier person, the more I realized that people around me, if I keep on hanging out with them, you know, people used to call me like, hey, you know, it's like Wednesday or Thursday, like, come out, you know, we're all going out. We're going out at 11:30. We're going to be back by 3 a.m. or something, you know, Delhi is. And I said, no, I have to wake up in the morning to go to the gym. And I said, I'm going to have to stop hanging out with these people. I can't go out 4 times a week. Maybe I can go out 1 time a week.
Yes.
And maybe I can eat out and unhealthy once a week. I can't eat out and healthy every day, you know. So that, all that started becoming so prevalent to me. And as I joined this community of people at CrossFit, they were also healthy in themselves.
Right.
So I started making new friends who are much healthier. But at the end of the day, my self-belief in myself started increasing.
Right.
So I felt for the first time confident about what food I can eat. So I realized to become strong, I have to start eating. And which is such a counterintuitive thing from what I had believed for all these years. You know, people are like, oh, I'm sure you don't eat anything. Like, that was people's first instinct. I said, no, I in fact eat a lot. I had to eat a lot. You know, today if I can lift more than 200 pounds, it's because I eat a lot.
Yes.
You know, so people think that's just contradictory to the popular belief. But then I was going against the popular beliefs. I was going against what people said. And I just had to figure out my own path. Like, my family wasn't there to help me out, obviously, in this weight loss department, because they are super, like, unhealthy on their own. And my friends were totally the wrong kind of friends. So I had to make my own journey, and a lot of it was made alone.
Mm-hmm.
I had to motivate myself to wake up in the morning. Nobody around me motivated me to do that. I had to motivate myself to eat the right things. You know, still all those taste buds that I developed as a kid for samosas, jalebis, chips, like it's all still there. Which is why it was so hard. It's still hard for me. Like if you leave French fries on the table, I will eat them. I mean, it's, and it's, I feel so sad that I could have changed this way back when I was a kid. I mean, I wouldn't have even had to struggle through all this.
So,
you know?
But it was not your responsibility.
Yes. We can talk about that also.
Yes.
You know, whose responsibility is it?
Yeah, because in one of your article you talked about mental fitness or mental health.
Yes.
And why teachers and parents are not coming into picture. They are not talking to their kids.
Yes.
So I think if your parents could have intervened at that time, this journey would be much easier.
I really want, you know, people look at me and I'm just an exception.
Yeah.
It's like everybody else is unhealthy and I'm the healthy one in the room. And people ask me, Priya, yeah, like so amazing, yeah. How did you do it? But I don't want this to be like that, that I'm the only one healthy and there are 10 unhealthy. Why can't it be that there are 10 healthy and the one unhealthy person is being forced to be healthy by those 10 healthy people? Right. Yes. Now, if you walk down the street, there's one fit person for every, like, I don't know, 300 unfit people. Yeah. In this country. It should be the reverse.
Right.
You know, but that requires so much changing of mindset, so much hard work to be put in. I mean, I've counseled so many of my friends. People mm-hmm. ask me, Priya, what do you do? How do you do it? What do you... First of all, I tell them it's not an overnight thing. I took a lot of time. I've been doing CrossFit for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Even before that, when I was trying to do whatever, I was reading up, I was doing all of these things. It's taken me that long to come here. And what I realize is that the human potential is endless. So
yes.
Which is why now I know that I am a work in progress. So the moment you realize everything you know, let's just surrender it for a while. Let's open our mind to new concepts and new things, you know, try things out, take them, absorb them, see what works for you, see what doesn't work for you. It's a process. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that process. It's been hard, but obviously to form these habits, to break the old, I mean, I've spent 15 years in the horrible state that I was. I mean, in that sense, 4 years seems like a good deal.
Yes.
That you broke it all in 4 years and now you can move on. Because you've done so much damage that needs to be reversed. It will take time. And it will take a lot of your dedication and motivation.
So how did you fight with the, you know, your cravings? And at times... You must be, you know, awake at night and you were craving for ice cream or something else. How did you fight with all those things?
You know, one is to fight with it.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I had to. Okay, so let's say this. So let's say I'm a child and I like hitting other kids. Okay, like I just want to go and just hit them and, you know, make fun of them and poke fun at them. But when someone tells you and someone says, don't do it, you know, you're like, I don't care. I'm going to go do it anyway.
Yes.
You know, you just go and do it. And you're like, I just want to do it right now. But when someone tells you why you shouldn't do it, like, you know, that person's going to feel bad. Imagine if that happened to you. So you understand the reason for not doing something. Then you stop doing it on your own. You don't even have a craving to do it. I know that was a weird example.
Yes.
But when I understood, the more about health I read, the kind of horrible effect of things like sugar, you know, not sleeping enough. When you understand why it's bad for you, if someone says don't do it, you will never fully be convinced. You're like, why shouldn't I do it? Yeah, it's okay. Nothing's happening to me. I mean, I can do it. That's what people say about smoking. That's what people say about so many things. Nothing's happening to me right now. But when you realize the consequences of that in your body and you realize the future consequences that you might have, you start... You know that you're doing something wrong.
It is going beyond fat loss. It is much more than that. You'll get older faster. Your cognitive abilities will fade away really fast. So these are the things. I mean, why we should think just about fat loss?
You know, for me, I think what has become more and more apparent is, so I know, you know, when you're even when you're in school, people tell you, you know, Priya has a lot of potential. You know, teachers would tell me.
Yes.
She's smart. She has potential and all. But she gets distracted very easily, you know. She's not able to put in any hard work. She's just like this. And I was so sick of hearing all these comments about myself. Although I knew it, I was lazy. I was not productive. I was smart enough to get good marks in the exams. But you know that if you had just worked for it and studied for it, you would have got a lot more. And why was that? Because I feel like mentally also, my mind was like all over the place. You know, and physical and mental go so hand in hand.
Yes.
You know, when you're physically fit and healthy, your mind is actually sharper, more concentrated. So if I really have to tell you, I can say that my physical health has had a very big impact on me as a person.
Yes.
Personality wise and my mental productivity, everything. I'm much more sharper. If you talk to any of my friends back in school, they'll say she was disorganized. She was like, you know, completely like all over the place. Her scatterbrain. You know, yeah. They can say so many things about me. But today they're looking at Priya, you're a totally different person. Like now I'm running a business. And no scatterbrain and person who doesn't work hard can do that.
Right.
The only, I feel like it's just a journey that, you know, health has taken me on, which is physical and mental. And like the question that you raised, that how did do I fight all these things? Like I said, I'm convinced about the fact that it's not good for me. Yes, there are, I know, you know, I now I make calculated risks. Like I know that, hey, if I eat this ice cream or chocolate or whatever, I know maybe I won't do that well tomorrow in my workout. But it's someone's birthday. So, I mean, I can't disrespect that bit.
Yes.
So you find a balance, but you know exactly what you're doing.
You just eat less.
You just eat less of it,
yeah.
You know, and you know, okay, it's a celebration. It's not an everyday thing for me at all. So once you start internalizing those things, understanding it, I think you can make better decisions in your life.
Yeah, like this, my coach, Ido Portal, he says, body is mind. There is no such thing as body and mind. Body is mind.
Wow.
So if they are in unison, everything will fall in line. So I think you got that essence, that gist, that body is mind, and now you're flourishing.
It's not very easy, I have to tell you. And one of the reasons why today I focus on kids. Like, I started Health Set Go.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Okay, so what was that question?
So what is the motivation behind, you know, starting Health Set Go?
Because see, Health Set Go, as you know, as a kid, it was really hard for me.
Yes.
I mean, as I kind of told you. And I've realized, see, adults, you know, changing adults, I've really tried to change my own family. Because I can see that my grandparents, you know, they have so many ailments. They can just reverse it. You know, to me, the solution I know is not medicines.
Yes.
The solution is just a better lifestyle. I can bet them half of their problems will disappear. Half of their medicine stash will go away.
Yeah.
But they are just not willing to change these quick fixes that society provides us with. You know, they're just not willing to change at that age. And I realized, kids, you know, they have a blank slate for a long time. They can be molded into anything. You know, their habits can be changed. As we know, habits are a very neurologically dependent connection. And to break that powerful connection can take a lot of time once you solidify it. But at a young age, none of this is solidified. So you have the opportunity to mold people into being healthy at a very young age. And that's what really attracted me, because if you look at healthcare, you look at chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, everybody has it. And these days, there used to be a time where the human race did not know of such diseases.
Yeah.
And now we are at a stage where every family, you know, some members who have XYZ.
Diabetes is so common.
It's so common. And it's like become, it's okay, yeah. You have diabetes, you can eat this laddu, just have this insulin shot and you eat the laddu. Man, what kind of, what's going on? Seriously, you know. And these kids are growing up in the same families. They will be the same people.
Yes.
Hospitals are crowded today, I'm telling you. Hospitals are full of patients. And there, can these patients really, are they really living a quality life? No. They are not being productive members of the society. They spend half the time in the hospital. They have migraines, headaches. How can you work to your true potential. If you're sick, and if you're seeing 1 in 5 people in India has diabetes, their productive level has gone down by 40%. What this country could have been with hale, hearty, healthy people, it's not able to reach that.
And the irony is, even those doctors are like that. Half of the doctors
have this
smoking habit. They eat shit, and they themselves have diabetes and many different issues. So, because I train doctors also. So
yes. See, we know. I mean, if I say something bad about the doctor's profession,
yeah, you also
right
interact
now,
with doctors a lot.
I interact a lot with doctors, and I think again, doctors are made to cure. They're not made to prevent. They have a role in society, yes, because if there were no doctors, many people would be suffering by now. They have inflicted it upon themselves by their lifestyle, and now they have to pay lakhs of rupees. Imagine you worked so hard, your savings are there. You have to spend it in the hospital for one surgery or treatment because you could not lead a healthy lifestyle. People say, oh my god, gym is so expensive. Healthy food is so expensive. First of all, I don't get all this stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's so expensive, later on what bill you have to pay, I'm telling you, it's going to be way more expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not as expensive as a cancer treatment, trust me. And because of that, I think genetically Indians are changing, seriously. The kind of diseases you are passing on to your kids. Like if someone has diabetes, they're going to pass on that particular tendency to their kids. So we're creating a pool of diseased people in the country and nobody is really doing anything to stop it. You know, sometimes you feel like when you become healthy, now you look around and you feel like, oh my god, I have the solution. Like, let me tell people like how they can change themselves, and nobody's going to listen to you.
Especially your own family members.
Yeah. You know, so I feel like, oh my god, I can reverse this, I can change this guy. I see people on the plane and I'm like, oh my god, this guy is overweight, like I can help him. But there has to be a way to do it, like, you know, a way to convey your message, and there's a way to change things. So I realized that my calling is with kids. Because I really feel like they are the future. Nothing has happened to them right now. There's still time. And for the generation where there's still time, and I urge everybody in the healthcare industry, instead of spending the next $1 billion on the next drug to cure a disease, if you spend that on education of kids, they will not even have that disease. I mean, that is my aim, that let these kids grow up in a way where they are so aware. See, you can only educate. You can't scold a kid in India and give him 2 slaps and say, don't eat that cookie or don't have that sugary thing. They'll never understand.
Yes.
You have to involve them. They have to tell other kids, like, why are you eating that, man? Like, it's so unhealthy. Like, why would you do that?
Right.
Even through CrossFit, I've seen kids in CrossFit. I still remember there's a guy, if he ever listens to this, I was really impressed by the story about him. He's actually in CrossFit Life Performance.
Mm-hmm.
Philippe is his name. So this guy, he's never told me this, but I heard about it and it just remained in my mind a couple of years back, that he goes to school. So he goes to a very high-end school. So people there already in class 8th and 9th are all doing drugs, you know, going out to parties and this and that. But this guy wakes up in the morning, makes his own food, like proper healthy food, goes through school, goes home, again, like has his own lunch, proper healthy stuff, goes to train, and you know, comes back, like he's waking up in the morning early, he knows the kind of food he needs to eat, he's like an aware child. I mean, it's so strong. He's like, I just don't hang out with the rest of the people in school, because he's also isolated, right? He's the only one who thinks like that. So if more kids start to change their perspective, they will make better decisions. Tomorrow, you will put 100 rupees in the child's hand and say, this is your pocket money. Now, like I did, I went and bought chips with it. You know, India is the only country literally where on the street, you have seasonal vegetables and fruits available for you to buy.
Yes.
Why do you want to walk into a shop and buy a packet of chips where you can buy a banana or an apple or have coconut water? Like, it's all just available in front of you.
It's so hard to find all these things in foreign countries.
Yeah.
On the road.
On the road. You don't even have to stop anywhere. It's just like on the road. People are like, oh my god, what's, like, how do we have healthy food? Like, where do we find it? What is it? I'm like, it's all around you. It's all around us. You know?
So, in HealthSet Go, you are trying to inculcate those habits in the kids. And what else you are doing in
Health? So in Health Ed Go, the aim is to educate the kids in school. So we do that through activities at the school level, which are driven by kids itself. Okay. So kids are the ones doing these activities, whether it's a simple concept like the 8 steps of washing your hands, mm-hmm. or whether it's another thing like we have a balanced diet month, mm-hmm. wherein every kid has to make his own tiffin. Wow. And in that tiffin, he has to split the ingredients between proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. So we give them a list. Huh. And we say, you choose your own things and you make your own tiffin, but it should have all three things. So they get empowered, like, you know, this tiffin I've made. Okay. So now I want to eat it. You know, I mean, when it's something you do, you want to force your parents, like, mom, please, please make this because this is like what I decided. So they get the power to make their own decision. For example, we have a sugar awareness month. So mm-hmm. the months that I'm talking about, the whole year is split into different months. Mm-hmm. So we have a hygiene and sanitation month, a nutrition month, a sugar awareness month. So interestingly, talking about sugar, in a sugar awareness month, we tell them, hey, this is the amount of sugar that's required by you every day. Mm-hmm. Now you can eat whatever you want in that. So go and find out your favorite food, how much sugar is there in them. And you eat that much, it's okay. Now when they go and they see that a can of an aerated drink has 40 grams of sugar, right. and their allowance is like 6 grams, they're like, should I just have one sip of this? I mean, how am I going to fit it in? And then they realize, instead of drinking that, maybe I can just have like 10 apples. It would be the same as that. So they
start, get so many other things.
Yeah, they start comparing, they start analyzing. So it's a very powerful mechanism in that sense. We also do a very thorough medical examination of students. Mm-hmm. So that is, again, very important because parents usually believe that children are fundamentally healthy, which now we are finding because of the increased time they are spending on gadgets, their eyesight is weak, the sugary foods they are eating, every children has so many cavities. Apart from that, we've seen thyroid, PCOD, those kinds of diseases at a very young age. So we help detect those diseases at the school level, which is great because parents don't have the time to take their children to do all right. these things. So once we detect them, we completely digitize all the medical reports. We counsel each and every parent. We have a team of experts. We call the parents up, tell them about what are the ailments of their kids. Sometimes when the child is normal, parents themselves tell us, you know, he's behaving in this way. He doesn't like this fruit and vegetable. What am I supposed to do? Should they have Bonvita or Horlicks or what? You know, so many questions that mothers and fathers have about health, about how to bring their child up, because even they don't know.
Right.
The education has to go to them also. Yes. That what is how to be a parent who makes their kids also healthy.
Yeah, Osho used to say that we have entry level for each and everything. Like for a particular job, you must have some kind of eligibility. To become a parent, you must go through education, go through some kind of course.
Oh, wow.
He used to say that, but I don't know when that will be implemented.
I wish. Parenting is so unscientific. A mother who sends her child to a school which has cookies and chocolate milkshake in the morning for breakfast and which has Chinese for lunch and Italian for snacks and all, she thinks, wow man, I'm an amazing mother. Let me pay this, you know, 4 lakh, 5 lakh rupee school fee and I'm doing a great job. When she doesn't realize she's being the worst parent. That kid is going to get used to cookies and chocolate milkshake in the morning every year for 16 years of his life. How is that healthy? For him to break that sugar rush, you know, then parents say, oh, the child falls asleep in class.
Yeah.
Why do they fall asleep in class? Yeah, you spike their sugar up so much in the morning, they crash.
Yeah.
By the time it's 11 o'clock, they're done. They want to sleep. Yeah. Do you think the child is learning anything in class at that time? No.
No.
He is so fed with food, he cannot concentrate.
At the same time, don't you think, like, we used to play a lot? At least I remember we used to go outside every day before school, after school, and during the school. And we used to play a lot. Not like some structured game, cricket or basketball or something, but anything. Anything we used to play. But these days, kids don't play at all.
Kids definitely don't play.
Yeah.
I feel like even my parents didn't encourage me to play. And that's because I was really good at my studies and debating club and or whatever. They said, you stay at home and you read your books or whatever you want to do. you don't have to go out, because it's not like you're going to become a Sachin Tendulkar. So may as well you sit at home and you do things that you can be good at.
Right.
So it's not, what I feel is like the importance we give to brushing our teeth and to having a bath every day, the same importance needs to be given to general maintenance of playtime or general maintenance of fitness level.
Right.
Because it's a part of your hygiene every day, like everyday hygiene.
I see people take their kids to gym, but kids are not interested in gym.
Yes.
It's so definitely organized and so boring at times. So how can a kid, you know, accommodate himself or herself in that kind of setting? So I think they need more play, more trees, more companions to play with.
There's so much science behind people saying that, you know, today we give our kids toys, ready-made toys, and that there's no imagination that they need to use now. The house is made, Barbie house is made, Barbie car is there. You know, if you leave a kid just like that, they will create their own games. They will create wonderful things on their own. You don't even have to give them a toy.
Right.
Like, honestly, kids just love games.
Right.
If you leave them, they'll run around on their own, and then they'll, by the time then they'll get tired, they'll just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Kids are like that. But I think the way the education system is today, it really needs to change. We are also taking some steps towards that in terms of how can we encourage schools to accommodate general fitness levels. Because everybody is not into sports, right? That's also a fact. Like, people are not into the basketball team, football team, cricket team. Done. Now that's 2% of the entire school. So what about the rest of the kids who don't want to do sports? What about their activity levels? Because they don't end up doing anything in that games period. So they need to also be engaged. So we are trying to find ways in which, you know, schools can take up fitness in general to be a thing.
Yeah. So again, we are talking a lot about fitness. What is fitness for you? For you only, not for all.
It's a big question. Fitness is different from health, like we said. Health is a more holistic concept, which is mental and physical. Fitness for me today would be the ability to do anything that comes my way.
Okay.
So, for example, in my regular life, you know, of course, now I can lift a very heavy suitcase. It doesn't matter to me, you know, and I can walk around. Sometimes I still pretend I can't and I let other people pick up my suitcase.
Yeah.
But I feel like generally if someone today tells me like run 5K or lift this weight or swim or do anything, I can do all of those modalities to a certain level. I don't have to say no to anything. You know, so that is what fitness is for me. And some people talk about a keystone habit. And I feel fitness has been one such keystone habit that has impacted other parts of my life. Because to be fit, what you need to do is what health is all about. So it's like, to be fit, I need to eat better. To be fit, I need to sleep better. To be fit, I need to be like more regimented in the way I think about things, which is what's changed my whole life. So for me, fitness has been that.
So, like you told us about your fitness definition, but in this definition, you didn't talk about, you didn't say anything about fat or fat loss.
Yes.
These days, fitness has become equal to fat loss.
Oh, yes.
What do you think about this notion?
See, it starts with fat loss for many people. The journey starts, like I said, the journey for me started with fat loss.
Mm-hmm.
And let it be whatever reason you walk into a gym, or that could be the reason. It's okay.
Any activity.
Because in the end, people do care about how they look. And we can never take that away from them. I mean,
today, I
still care about how I look. It's not like I can take that away and like, oh, I don't care now. And you know, I've become a caveman and like, I just care about my fitness. It's not like that. People want to look good. And that can be the reason for them to start.
Right.
But I feel like in fat loss in general, not weight loss. Weight loss is different from fat
loss. Exactly. That's why I'm only using the term fat loss.
People don't understand that fat loss term. People want to lose weight. They want to look at the scale and see weight drop.
Right.
Today, I told you I used to be 49.
Yeah.
I'm 59 today. Mm-hmm. That's my weight. But I look so much fitter. I am so much fitter. I feel like now I look much better than I looked at 49. So I would tell people, don't look at weight loss on the scale.
Yes.
The weighing scale is an information point, but it's not the end all. Because you want to look at fat loss. And fat loss will only happen if you look at it holistically. You can't walk into the gym and expect fat loss. I know so many people who go so hard at the gym. They're in the gym for 3 hours a day. But there's no fat loss.
Yeah.
There's no fat loss. Because fat loss means that there is more muscle in your body. You're stronger. You know, there are more performance related things attached to fat loss. But in weight loss, none of that happens. Today, I can stop eating and I'll see weight loss. But it's not what you want. You want fat loss. And if you're fit, that's just then you can take it as a side effect.
I think as a coach and as a trainer, we are also at, we are not giving that kind of education to people by and large, like 5-6% trainers may be doing that. But most of us try to give them a diet and an exercise program. And ma'am, you will lose like 6 kg in 4 weeks. So we are also the part of the problem. We have to get out of, we have to get over with this mentality of helping people in this way. We should, I think we should stop thinking about earning money and give them the right goal at times. Like you talked about counseling the kids. We must counsel those people first before they enter in the gym, I guess.
And I feel like if you give them the right goal,
yeah,
they will, money, you will earn money.
Yes, exactly.
Because they will love what you have done for them.
Everyone is worried about that easy money. It's easy.
Yes.
Because if you will give them some kind of crazy diet, there are so many crazy diet in the market, and they will lose 6-7 kgs in a month, and then what?
Then what?
Yeah. Nobody thinks about that what. In your TED talk, you talk about why. Finding your why.
Yes.
And in Simon Sinek's TED talk, I listened, he also talked about why.
Yes.
Find your why first. So what is this why? You talked about it though.
Yes.
But how to find that why?
Correct. So, like a lot of people say that one day you will find a reason and then you have to do it. Yes, that in a way it's true that there is something that motivates you. There's a reason that motivates you. And sometimes the reason could be that as simple as your friend is doing it, so you want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the initial reason. The first why could be I want to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
That is the why still, right? See, when my why was I want to look good, I want to lose weight. And if I pull anybody from the street, their why will be this only. I want to look good, I want to lose weight. That's my why. But what that why motivates you to do, we need to give a direction to that.
Yes.
People have a why. I mean, that why is there in people. There are people who don't have a why also. For them, the why has to be, for example, see whether we like it or not, people's why initially is looks related.
Yes.
And there are many people who are, they don't put on weight at all. They eat whatever and everybody is jealous of them. You know, man, he eats whatever he wants, doesn't put on any weight. Because that's what they think is the is the ultimate trophy. You know, I eat whatever I want and I don't put on weight. So that guy who doesn't put on weight has no why.
Yes.
Like he's on the other, especially if it's a girl, she has no why whatsoever. I see a lot of girls who don't put on weight and they are very happy not doing anything remotely related to health or fitness. For them, it's a little harder to be pushed. For them, they have to understand the importance of health in their life. That is a little harder for them to start. But for the majority of the other people, there are many men who eat a lot and don't put on weight, but they are more motivated because they are like, I want to be stronger.
Yes.
So that's their why. See, whatever the why is, there's no right or wrong why. A lot of grandparents, I feel like their why should be like, I want to play with my grandkids. They can't play, a lot of them, because not strong enough, they get tired, this and that. So you have to figure out a role model. Maybe it's not, the why doesn't come from you.
Yes.
It comes from somebody else. There is a role model that you're like, hey, I always wanted to be like that person. And it could be like, I always wanted to be like Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg. But if you look into the life of Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg or President Obama or Narendra Modi or anybody who is your
role model,
they spend so much time on their health.
Yes.
They do. And when you know, that's what I tell some people, these entrepreneurs, right? They're like, we work 20 hours a day. I'm like, one second. Are you busier than Narendra Modi right now? Are you like busier than XYZ person? And they spend time on their mind. They spend time reading. They spend time exercising, running. If people follow Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook, because he puts up a lot of his own life on Facebook, he ran in every city he visited. He used to do 5Ks, 6Ks every morning with his team. He used to get his team involved and they all used to run across the city. Mm-hmm. So these people do take out time. It's not like they take out time because it's fun. They take out time because they know that that is making their mind sharper. That is making their daily life much better. So you need to find your why, either in a person or in yourself. But there has to be a reason that will push and motivate you.
Yeah, don't you think like these activities in the gym, especially in CrossFit gyms, and now every gym is, you know, adopting this high intensity concept.
Yeah.
This high intensity concept makes people, you know, fear from the workouts, and maybe that is the reason they're not taking up fitness.
Yes, I feel like many people are intimidated because they don't want to walk into the gym. I know this because of my mom. I feel like someone who's been out of fitness for a long time, it's not like they don't want to. It's that they are so embarrassed that they don't want to walk into the gym.
And it is too much for them.
It's too much for them. They see people around them, they, you know, just doing something crazy. They're like, how will I ever do that? I think for those people, it's very important for them to find a community of people who are doing exactly what they're doing. Like walkers, right? Yeah. They're discredited so much. Like what happens in walking? But that's a big step for some people.
Yes.
You know, I feel for people who are very intimidated, find the people exactly like you.
Yeah.
And then you both push each other. Even if it's to walk, just go for a walk. Very soon you realize, hey, this walk is doing nothing for me now.
Yeah.
Maybe I can try like joining another community, or maybe a running group, or maybe you don't have to walk into a gym. You know, I feel like a lot of people like dancing and do Zumba, you know, do anything that floats your boat, because in the end, it is important for you to do something. So for people who don't want to join a high intensity workout, first I used to be like, oh, high intensity is the way to go. It's what it is. You know, you should do CrossFit. You should do CrossFit. Everybody should do CrossFit. Then I realized it's not like that. People have different motivations. People enjoy different things.
Yes.
You should do what you enjoy, and that will make you want to go again. People are like, I hate going to the gym. Don't go to the gym. If you hate it so much, please do something else.
Yeah.
But do something.
Yeah, in Delhi Rocks, I spent 6 months learning rock climbing, and I see a lot of different activities they do, like aerial classes, doing some acro yoga or something. So people have different kind of talents. They may not like this high intensity thing, but they can do a lot of other things. So, I mean, again, the onus is on us to tell people that if this is not right for them, what is right for them, and go and find that right thing for themselves. So I think it solves the question, the problem. Yeah. The next thing is, you talk, you write and post a lot about paleo diet.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and you have, you know, lots of love for the book, Paleo Solution.
Yes, I really like that book.
So,
correct.
So, how can someone actually start paleo diet in today's era? Like, you are doing that. You once posted that I don't eat rice, I don't eat wheat. But still, I can eat.
Yes.
Most of the people think there is nothing to eat if you don't eat rice and wheat.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, should people start the paleo diet, or should people start any diet? There's so many diets. The new buzzword is keto, keto, and people are like, oh, I'm on a keto diet.
Paleo is not a diet at all. I think it's not more a diet. Lifestyle.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so I can also not sit here and advise people to eat. Follow the paleo diet, because for a lot of people, depending on their goals, they should eat different things.
Right.
For example, I know that if you want to gain weight, the paleo diet is not the best diet for you, because it does not probably provide you with a lot of the extra food that you need in the day. So the paleo diet is mainly about what to eat, a thought process about what is good to eat. Mm-hmm. And why I like it so much is because it's cemented in a lot of common sense. Mm-hmm. So it says that you should not eat anything processed. Let's take it one at a baseline. And that is the ultimate truth. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not something that paleo diet said. I think that's something that anybody should be talking yeah. about. You know, the moment you flip a packet of anything, first of all, it's in a packet. That means it's not fresh. It's been stored for like 6-7 months. Yeah. And you're already eating something which is stored in nitrogen or whatever. So think yeah. about that for a minute. Then turn the packet and you will read all these words that you don't know what they mean. I mean, all these chemicals. I don't know, like, they sound very scary, actually. If I look at it, like, hey, I'm eating maltodextrin or whatever. I mean, you know, yeah, it says apple juice, but actually it says all these other things. I would really tell people to turn around, flip and read ingredients, because it'll actually scare you.
If you what you're consuming. Them, then
if you
don't
cannot,
buy them.
If it is anything but that thing.
Yeah.
So, for example, apple juice should be apple juice. Ingredients, apple juice. There should be nothing else. And if there is anything else, drop it and run away.
Yeah.
Because it's processed. It is like it's made in a factory. And something made in a factory is something made in a factory. It's not food.
Right.
So I think what I learned best from the paleo diet was eat food. Eat real food.
Real food.
It should be food. Like, again, it sounds so obvious, but it's not very obvious. People eat out of a packet all the time. And it's really weird why, as a society, we would spend even 5 rupees of our money on eating something out of a packet
yeah.
when we know we're ingesting those chemicals.
Like Mark Sisson says, I eat only things which can fly, which can swim, which
yeah.
can run. I
yeah,
only
yeah, yeah.
or they're hanging somewhere on a
yes,
tree.
On a tree, yeah. yeah. Exactly. And that's true. Even for our kids or whatever, you know, the kind of synthetic stuff that we do, even ice cream these days, you know, it's not made of milk products. It's made of something totally different. It's just harmful in general. So I like that philosophy. Mm-hmm. I like that you should not have any added sugar. That's also a great thing I learned and till today implement from the paleo diet. Because what we eat, the amount of sugar we need in our body, it's actually already present in a lot of the food that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't know. You know, when I say I don't eat bread and rice, it's like, oh, you don't eat carbs. I said, one second, that's the most uneducated thing to say, because what is a carbohydrate? If we go back to sixth class chemistry,
yeah.
it is actually a sugar molecule.
Right.
That is sugar. Like, I am eating carbohydrates. Vegetables and fruits are carbohydrates.
Yes. yes.
Like, we stopped eating carbs. I said, no, I'm eating carbs. If I didn't eat carbs, I won't have any energy left in my body to do any of my workouts. So I am eating that. It's just the source is different. The source is something found in nature much more easily, which I know the production of which is less processed
yeah.
and things like that. It's easier for the body to take and all of that. So that was an important learning from the paleo diet. Another very important thing is, I think, how you look at food. So if you look at food as something to give you pleasure, that's not the right way to look at food. It's like if every time I'm breathing, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling so great right now. You're not breathing to feel good. You're breathing because it's a functional requirement of your organs in your body to function well. People should look at food that way. I'm eating food because this gives my body some nutrition for it to function at its optimal level. I'm not eating food to have a great time with my friends and enjoy it. It's actually a requirement of the body. And the more we eat processed food, the more we eat things where the nutrients have been killed, the more we keep cooking and cooking and cooking and cooking and killing our food, the more we are depriving ourselves of nutrition in our body, which is the purpose of food. Purpose of food is nutrition.
Yes.
And if you take away the purpose of food and replace that purpose with pleasure, it's not that. The purpose is gone.
Even you can have pleasurable healthy food.
Of course, you
very
can have
easily.
Okay, yeah, sorry. This comes across as other food is not pleasurable. I love the food I eat. But it's just that people are looking for that crazy dopamine response,
right.
which is coming basically from sugar. So, you know, you're looking for that kick, which is not something you need to look at food for. We are looking at our phones today for that same response, for that
yes.
kick, notification kick. Oh my God, somebody gave me a notification, like your brain lights up. it's that's not the purpose of these things. Maybe even the phone was invented for you to be more productive in your life, and now it's like taking it away.
Yeah, we are getting addicted with this.
Yeah. So paleo actually follows very simple rules, which I like. I mean, it just tells you to... there is, of course, it says stay away from dairy also. It says stay away from grains. For me personally, and I'm only talking for me personally, eliminating dairy and wheat has been the difference between 0 and 1,000. I mean, it has been so beneficial to my life.
So true.
It has changed my body composition. I can go as far as to say that.
I don't know about body composition, but it has reversed my thyroid.
Oh, amazing.
Leaving, I won't say I don't eat, I don't drink dairy at all.
Yeah.
Because I like Sandesh.
Yeah.
So at times when I am in Calcutta, I eat them. But yes, wheat is totally eliminated and it has changed me.
See, that's the thing. I mean, you know, there was a time when I was following strict paleo.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, like even you say sometimes, I eat Sandesh and I eat a couple of things. So once you understand that philosophy, you apply it, you get the best out of that philosophy.
Right.
You try another philosophy, you get the best out of that philosophy. Then you develop what is best for your body. And that is an amalgamation of many kinds of diets you would have read throughout your life. But that's what's best for you. Like now I know my body so well. I have such good body awareness that I know this is not good for me. This is good for me. This much of this is good for me. This timing of eating is good for me. Once you know your body reacts to it in a certain way, the best thing that Rob Wolf has said, I think Rob Wolf said it in his book, that try it for 21 days. He says it, I think. He's like, leave something, like, yeah, if you leave something for like 21 days or let's say a month, and then you reintroduce it, I think that's a great way to do anything with any food item in your body, and your body welcomes it back. Like, I left milk for a month, and if I start drinking milk again, your body's like, feels great after you drank that milk again. Milk is good for you. But if you drink it again and you feel bloated, you feel like, oh my god, I feel weird in my stomach right now, your body is rejecting it. It was never good for you in the first place. A lot of times people say I feel sleepy after eating. That is because something about that food is not correct for you. A lot of people call these like nightshades, for example, they say potato, you know, different kinds of things. Don't eat those foods. I mean, people go in many different directions. For example, a lot of people with autoimmune diseases, like they don't eat legumes and they don't eat potatoes. The doctors say, like, the really nutritionally educated guys, they put them off of these kinds of things and they recover. So actually everybody is very different.
Yes.
You have to listen to your body. You know, for paleo worked beautifully for me for like a lot of time. It taught me a lot about looking at food in the way of nutrition. It taught me about eliminating packaged foods. And I think it did great for me. But today, I still actually follow 99% of it. But there is a bit of a nutrition. For example, I will eat cottage cheese, like paneer. I will eat like sometimes because my body's still okay with it. You know, I might... For milk, I still go with soy milk. Dairy does not suit me. But I have figured out just a couple of more additions. For example, before a competition, I've realized, or before a day when I'm doing something heavy, if I have rice that day, like, it's a good fuel for me for the next day.
A
like,
night before.
Yeah, a night before, or whatever. So these things are very customized.
Yes.
I can't say they'll work for anybody else but me. And sometimes I eat chocolate before a competition.
Yeah.
I've won all competitions where I've eaten chocolate right before. So, you know, I can't say that there is a recipe for anyone or anything. One time I put up on my Instagram saying that if you feel really under-recovered, eat chocolate and do this thing. And people are like, oh my god, isn't chocolate unhealthy? Like, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, I know it is. But it's just one of those little tricks that you know you can manipulate your body for a minute to behave a certain way. See, because I'm so low sugar for the rest of my entire week, month, day, that the moment I have a little sugar, my body's energized.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have chocolate and you have chocolate like once like in 2-3 weeks or no, once in a day or something, and if you have chocolate again, nothing will happen to you.
Yeah.
But for me, that adds like a lot of momentum to my performance because
you have developed a healthy relationship with food now.
Yes, yes.
It was abusive first.
Yes.
But now it is very healthy.
Now it's much healthier. Still, I will say that again, I'm not like a god on this. I mean, we all have days where we need to take a break. And in fact, it's proven it's very important for your body to take a break. So now I've learned those things also. That take a break, you know. Take a break from this for like a bit. You should try to change things up. A lot of people cut calories to lose weight. A lot of people cut, you know, when they're cutting, for example, they lower the number of calories in a day. But after a while, that stops working. They're like, how much lesser can we eat, man? It's not working. But then one of the people I follow, she's like, after you go down that much, you're eating like 500-600 calories a day. Now, maybe the next thing that will work for you, the only way is up from there.
Yes.
Now, if you go up from there, in fact, it might have a positive effect on your body.
Yeah, there is a huge science behind that.
How much energy
your body can produce in a day. So let's come to your article in World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
You wrote about empathetic and sensitive society.
Yes.
How we can do that?
How we can build an empathetic and sensitive society? Yes.
Yes. It's really important. I think it will change everything.
Oh, yes.
If we'll be able to do just that thing, we'll be able to change everything.
Yeah, that's obviously a tough one.
Yeah.
It really, you know, because if you have, again, this idea was put into my head by this person that I follow. And he said that, you know, why is it that I care about changing the world so much? Like, for example, me, like, why do I care about changing the lives of other kids?
Yeah.
Like, I can probably go and get a job somewhere and, like, you know, have a much better life and care just about myself.
Yeah.
And because that's what people do today. They don't care about their surroundings. Yeah. They don't care about other people. So the whole point is maybe through education, we can use that as a tool to make people more connected to not only themselves,
mm-hmm.
but start thinking about the other person. Start thinking about, then try to widen it. Think about people you don't know. Think for their well-being, I mean. Think about the well-being of your own house, your space, your society, your community. I mean, that's how it broadens. And I feel like a lot of people in the world who are driven by a cause, that cause is much bigger than them. You know, some people are like Gandhiji, you know, can say driven with the freedom of India.
Yeah.
That's got nothing to do with him. It's got a lot to do with the rest of the country. Why would he do that? It's because he felt a connection to everybody in the country enough to do that.
Yeah.
So if you feel a connection to more and more people, you will get more conscious about their well-being. You'll get more conscious about the society. You know, today we litter the floor, we say it's okay, somebody will pick it up, and no one's looking, let me like do this. If you actually had so much of a awareness about around you about different things, you would never do that in that sense. You know, so the way people, I feel like things like the way people bully each other, people treat each other badly, they shout at each other, there's so much restlessness in the world, right? There's one time that this guy, I'm sure you know of him, Sadhguru.
Yeah.
He said, you know, give me all the leaders of the world for 4 days or 1 week or something, and I'm telling you, I can cure the problems of the world.
Yeah.
He said he'll bring a mental transformation in them, you know. For us, there's a lot of, we're always thinking about ourselves. We're very restless around people. Like, you know, we overcompensate by acting a certain way, but we're not really getting inside ourselves and really reflecting every day and seeing, okay, what am I doing for other people? What am I doing for the society? And a very easy way for people to start doing that is actually something that I do. It's called just expressing gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be a very powerful thing in terms of appreciating the good things that are there in your life. And if you do that every day, and if you appreciate the good things that other people are doing for you, and if you appreciate the world, for example, why do you feel grateful today? Maybe you might feel really, you know, grateful today that you know, you have such a great family around you, or you might feel grateful today that you know, I'm healthy and I'm fit. So when you express that gratefulness towards something, or you express a gratefulness even towards something you might not have at that point. Like, I feel grateful that I'm on the way to improving myself. You know, it just puts you in the mental frame that you suddenly start caring very deeply and are more motivated to do these things. So that could be an exercise that people could do every day to just express how lucky they are to be living in a house, to be living in the society, to be living in the world. So that broadens your horizons a little bit, and it might help us all to...
Even I think these days people don't even talk to their neighbors. They even go to parties and still... I think this phone thing is also very responsible that we don't even look outside our cabs, outside of our windows. We don't see people playing in the parks. Because, you know, when you are in open, like in our tribal societies, people used to go out, hunt together, play together, cook together. If we can bring something like that, that paleo solution again in this way in a society, things could be much better.
Yes, we should definitely try to do that.
Yeah. I'm trying to make some plans for that, but I don't know if I'll be.
I hope you do. That's very needed in society.
Now let's come to your Olympic lifting. You went all the way to Bangalore to learn from Dmitry Klokov.
Yes.
What motivated you to do that?
I would never pass that opportunity up. Yeah. I mean, actually, I was in a phase where I fell in love with weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And I used to follow the Olympics. And I had seen Dmitry Klokov, like, lift in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I had seen documentaries about him. And mm-hmm. I just could not believe that he was coming to India and anybody could just get an opportunity to train with him. So for me, weightlifting is an art. It's such a beautiful thing. Yes. A lot of people feel like, why would you say that? But, you know, when you do it yourself, I think you see how tough it is. Just to master two movements can take people decades just to master them. And so for somebody who's been at that level of performance, any kind of education he would provide would just be priceless. So that's what motivated me to go there.
And... is it changed you as a weightlifter and as a human being in some way?
Well, when I went there, you know, we thought, oh my God, we're going to get all these barbells and we're going to do some heavy lifting and stuff. We were there, first of all, for 11 hours. Like, it was a day's thing, but he didn't let us go home. Like, he could have stayed there till very late, but all of us wanted to just go home and eat something. We were so hungry. He was so dedicated. We started at like 8:30 a.m. and we ended at 11:30. Maybe that's way more than 11 hours. Sorry. Wow. That's like way more. I think more than 14 hours. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm getting it wrong. But yeah, he stayed there till the night. Yes, I remember. We stayed at like 11:30 p.m. Wow. And he didn't want to go anywhere. He was happy staying there. Mm-hmm. And the whole day, we were the ones, we got the opportunity to eat. We ran and we just ate because we were so tired. He hardly even ate much. I still remember he didn't eat, but he was just so passionate about talking about the knowledge he had. And most of the 14 hours or something that we were there, we just used a PVC pipe. And then we graduated onto an empty barbell. Mm-hmm. We did not go anywhere beyond that. And all the tiredness and hunger that I described came from that empty barbell.
Wow.
I mean, he would make us hold a position till we cried. He said, hold this, like hold the starting position of the snatch. And then he would, you know, he in the end told, like, I don't know who's coaching you guys in India because you guys are really shit. I said, okay. Because, you know, we don't activate a lot of our muscles. He really tried to make us activate our quads, which we don't activate that much in lifts at all. He said they are underdeveloped for you guys, and which is why you're finding it so tough to even hold an empty bar in the correct position. And if you can't have a correct position, if you can't have a correct mid position or a pull, you can't lift heavy weight. He didn't allow anybody to put weights because he said none of you deserve to put weights on your bar.
So lots of character, lots of discipline he taught you guys.
Yes, and you just realize the magic of what you can just learn from an empty barbell, you know, and how much we need to focus more on our technique. Of course, we were taking notes and we just wanted to, you know, learn as much as we could. So yes, it did change the way I lived. It changed a lot.
I didn't get this chance to train with him so far, but I am following his videos.
Yes. Like,
a lot of videos on YouTube for last 4 years.
Huh.
And my lifts are improving like anything.
Yeah.
It's so simple how he's teaching, like when I'll meet him, I think things will get way better. But his style is so priceless.
Yes.
And so simple language, even Russian's English is so good.
Yeah, it's Russian.
But I want to actually learn that Bolshevik mentality. Those Russians, they have such caliber. They can stand from 9 o'clock till 12 a.m. in the morning. So it's...
No, that's what you felt from it, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have any ego. He was just a regular guy. I mean, I still remember... We all walked in. I mean, he walked in at like 8:45 or something, and we were all just there. We just like huddled up. He just started working out.
Yeah.
Okay, so he pulled out a bar and he was doing a push press.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a 400-pound push press like in front of all of us.
Yeah.
And as soon as he entered, and kind of that kind of established that yes, we are in the room with Dmitry Klokov.
Yeah.
And then he started. So we all had a mad respect for him because he saw it in front of our eyes, you know. And he's like, oh, I'm not really my best and all that. So he is obviously, you don't get to that level with without discipline, without focusing on your food, without all of that. So he taught us a lot. I mean, it was very, very, very motivational for me.
Priya, we are reaching to our last question now, and you have so much knowledge about CrossFit, about physical training, about changing lives, about nutrition. Why don't you become a coach?
You know, I feel I really thought about this initially.
Yeah.
When everything happened to me, like I said, when I changed my life, I just wanted to help other people. But my path of helping other people is something a little different that I've chosen,
yeah.
Which is to, you know, India has so many people, okay?
Right.
And if you can make even, so for example, like what I admire about a lot of coaches is, like let's say you work with 10 people,
mm-hmm.
You would follow up with them every day. You would make sure that these guys are, if they were zero, they reach their 100% healthy potential.
Right.
Now, let's say you, instead of 10, you started coaching 100 people.
Right.
Your impact will decrease.
Right.
Maybe you can't help them 100%. You can maybe give like 60% of your time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you said, okay, I want to help 10,000 people. Then maybe your impact is like 50%,
yeah.
You know. So I realized like, okay, I need to make sure that there is a certain level of education, let's say in the country, or there's a level, you know, of a benchmark. Of course, I'm not helping every child today very customized fashion,
one by
right?
One
by one, my God. But today we have reached out to more than 1 lakh kids.
Wow.
And how is that? Because I took a decision that whatever I'm going to do is going to be scalable. It's going to be replicable across any geography. And it's going to be something that will not be 100%.
Uh-huh.
But it'll be probably like a 40-50%. It's what I want to achieve. It's a goal I set. Because if you do 100%, maybe I could only do 50 schools. You know, or in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But today I know, I mean, there are 2 lakh schools in the country. And everybody deserves this,
yeah.
Right? So how do I get to all those people? And then ramp up the impact. So of course, impact, like I said, everyone's different. So, you know, the point is to empower these schools. I know I can't do everything. Why not become a coach? I can't become a coach for everybody. All I can do is empower other people with more knowledge. So they become coaches who train other people who become coaches. And when I'm talking about coaches, even a parent is like a coach. Even a teacher is like a coach. Even a principal of a school is coaching her own community. So everybody starts becoming empowered to take care of their own. And that's the only way to expand the impact. You know, me alone, I can't do everything. Which is why I have a team, which is why I have more people working, you know, with me on this mission. I have so many schools because in the end, that's how the word will spread. That's how things will change.
The passion you have, you are transferring or giving your passion bit by bit to other people so they can also understand what you are trying to do. And can make this country or maybe this world better.
Yes, that is my hope.
Yeah.
And I know it's not an overnight job, obviously.
Right.
I spent a few years in this field and I intend to spend, this is the kind of thing that I want to spend the rest of my life doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I just picked up because it's so fundamentally part of who I am,
mm-hmm.
then I can take it forward forever. So that's something that I hope to do for the country.
Thanks for talking to us, Priya. It was a fascinating conversation.
It was really nice being here.
And we learned a lot of things from you. And we have to learn a lot more from you. So we'll come back to you again.
I'm very happy to do that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You guys were listening to Priya Prakash in conversation with Abhishek. Check out our website, that is www.roadtorevamp.com, for more such content. My name is Sagar and you are listening to Road to Revamp.